Sweeney, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ev. How are you?
I'm all right. Let me start off with something that I know is confounding a lot of Yankee fans, and it's even confounding me, and it's certainly confounding Ernie Acosta, who has a major bias in this because this man's on his fantasy team, and it's the fantasy playoffs. All right, so let's get right to it.
The important stuff, right?
Well, for him, it's important. For me, it's baseball. For him, it's okay. The fantasy.
All right.
Why is Gary Sanchez trying to steal second base?
Yeah.
I know injuries can happen all the time, Sweeney. I get it. The Yankees have had it every which way. But I think with that injury, that's the frustrating part, that a guy who does not steal, should not steal, cannot steal, gets injured trying to steal.
I agree. As you're already up 3-0. It's not like it's a crucial point in the game where you need to run. You have pinch runners for that if you need it. He hasn't attempted a stolen base all year. He's never attempted more than 3 in any one season. I just found it a really weird place. If they said, you know, and they were talking about, you know, having the green light, they weren't holding him on. Still don't think it's a great idea at that point in time. You know, I hear what, you know, when you talk to players and kind of these unwritten rules type of thing, you have to play through, I think, like seven, you know, play through 7 innings. No matter what the score. So take those extra bases when you have the opportunity to do them, no matter if you have the lead. But I agree with you. I mean, you're talking about, you know, Gary Sanchez is not the type of guy who should be stealing bases. And I get that he was only trying to take the extra base because they were giving it to him. And it's unfortunate they got hurt. I didn't see the point in him trying to take that extra base at that point either.
Reading the tea leaves with him, it doesn't sound good. I mean, a groin injury, it's an injury he's already had. We don't have that much time before the playoffs start. I just, from at least what they're saying, because as you know, I have not examined Gary's groin, and I never will, I don't feel overly confident about what they're saying concerning Sanchez. How do you feel about this?
You know, if they're telling me it was similar to last time, that was a 3-week injury, I think. Or 2.5. And this is 3. You know, this is 3 weeks. Playoffs start 3 weeks from yesterday. I'm no longer concerned when I'm talking about him or Edwin Encarnacion, and he's in a different category with the oblique. I'm no longer concerned about getting them at bats before the playoffs. I just need for them to be healthy, you know, and they've got 3 weeks. So that's really the question here. And they're going to, you know, they have to turn in a playoff roster on, I believe it's noon, day of the first game. So Friday, October 4th at noon, they will have to turn in their roster. And that's going to be a big thing, you know? I mean, even if you think, let's take Encarnacion, for example. If you think he's going to be ready a couple of days after that, you know, could you keep him on the roster? Sanchez is in the same category here. We'll know more, I would say, Evan, in about 10 days from now. You have time to kind of figure out where you're headed with those guys. But to me, that's the key date anymore. I mean, there's 13 games left. To me, I don't care if they play in any single one of them. You know, you're this deep into the season, and you're talking about a short enough term of an injury. You know, Stanton's in a different situation because he hasn't played all year.
Right.
So kind of need to get him at bats. If Encarnacion and Sanchez don't get at bats and you stick them on the playoff roster because they're healthy, I think that's really the key thing there.
No, I'm with you, especially Edwin. Edwin, I think, already showed. You remember his first game back? It's as if he didn't miss a beat. So I think with him, there's no concern.
And he's really key. You know, listen, the Yankees, for the most part this year, they've actually had a pretty good record this year against left-handed pitchers, but, you know, internally they feel like they have had issues, and Encarnacion is a big factor there. Stanton can be a big factor there. You know, he's been missing. So these, and obviously Sanchez, you know, these are the guys who can help in that regard. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to be a huge deal for them in the postseason, depending on who the matchup is against. But you're talking about Encarnacion was a guy who looked like a spare part. But you can tell now, if you had to choose, put it this way, if you're choosing your ideal defensive and offensive alignment right now, you're choosing Gio Urshela at third, probably DJ LeMahieu at first. And I know there were a couple of plays last night. I'm throwing those away. Which means you have to choose at DH between Encarnacion, Voit, and Stanton.
Edwin.
Now,
Easy.
Yes,
it's easy.
Exactly right. Yeah. Now, Stanton's going to end up playing left because of the injury situation to Hicks.
Right.
Gardner is your center fielder. You're going to want Stanton in the lineup. He has to be left. So Edwin Encarnacion is such a force in that lineup, even if it hasn't shown in a monster year. Every single one of his at-bats is like a death match.
Yeah.
You know, and
so true.
That's impressive to see. That's important for this lineup. And he is an accomplished, you know, a veteran player, too. So you're talking about a guy who has some playoff experience, too, as opposed to some of these other guys in here. He is such an important piece to that lineup. It didn't show right away when they made that trade, but boy, has it shown.
Oh, it's so true. When they made that deal, I mean, I think we all had the same reaction. It's one of those trades, I remember where I was. You know, I remember where I was sitting when I heard it. And I cracked up because I said, come on, do they really need Edwin? And I will admit, Sweeney, since I mentioned this earlier with Sanchez, I have Edwin in fantasy, so my first reaction was,
okay.
I was very excited, Sweeney, because I said, oh, this is great. Put him at Yankee Stadium. But I also appreciated what he was doing in Seattle, and I appreciate that, and you brought it up, it's such a great point. For a guy who hits a lot of home runs, he has some of those at-bats that are worse, where it's eight, nine pitches. He's fouling balls off. And look, sometimes it ends in a strikeout. Sometimes it ends in a ground ball to third base. But those battles matter. I mean, they really wear on a pitcher. And you're so right. They didn't do anything at the deadline. That's fine. But the move they made for Edwin before the deadline, a few months before.
Huge.
Because of the injuries and because of how damn good he is, it's been monstrous. You're so right about that.
He's key, and you know, getting. I don't know the grade of this, and I don't have a history with him, obviously, and see what he's, you know, what his injury situation is to see how he comes back and how quickly and things like that. But he came back from a fractured wrist pretty quickly. He went 1-for-8 in 2 rehab games and said, "I'm good. I'm leaving." Yeah, and he showed up. Like I said, to me. For him and Sanchez, I don't care if they play a game again the rest of the season. You know, there's 13 games left. They don't need to be ready for those. They need to be ready for October 4th.
No question about it. We're talking to Sweeney about the Yankees. They did lose last night to the Blue Jays, but honestly, they didn't lose anybody injury-wise, so that's a plus. And we saw last night they didn't play Aaron Judge. He came in as a pinch hitter. The night before, and I don't know how you manage this. Maybe this is not realistic, what I'm about to tell you. But when Aaron Judge is crashing into the fence to make a great play, that's your instinct as a baseball player, and I respect that. A part of why Aaron Judge is so good is not just the home runs. He's really good defensively. But can you say to a player like Judge, look, for the next 2 weeks, don't run into the fence, don't dive, don't do anything crazy. If the ball goes off the wall and it costs us a game, it's not that big of a deal because at the end of the day, we're winning the division and we need you healthy for October. Is that a message, realistically, Boone can send to Judge and others?
You can try. I don't think you're going to have much success because Brett Gardner has actually delivered that message to Aaron Judge since, you know, I think as, you know, early as spring training and, you know, last year, you know, and Gardner's worst example of it because he does it all the time.
Right.
You know, he's told Judge, you know, don't do it. You're too important. I think they've tried to deliver a similar message to Clint Frazier because of the injury situation that he has found himself in. Since that concussion 2 years ago against the wall, it doesn't matter. You know, he's still slamming into walls trying to catch a ball. It's the part that takes over when they see a fly ball. I guess the other extreme of that is going to be Bobby Abreu, who was a tremendous hitter and tremendous player and a good outfielder, but caught a lot of flack for not wanting to run into walls. Well, guess what? He played 157 games every year because he didn't run into walls. And he drove in 100 runs every year because he didn't run into walls. So if it means letting a double drop every once in a while, you know, that's the price you have to pay. But that seemed to be ingrained in him as part of his game. And it's either there or it's not. Like I said, Brett Gardner has tried to tell these guys not to do it, and he does it all the time. So it's really not – the message isn't coming from a great place, and it seems to be falling on deaf ears because those guys are just who they are.
So Domingo Germán, all right, my theory is this, and maybe I'm dead wrong, but it worked out at least in his first performance. My theory is they want to limit his innings, which we kind of knew could happen, and that they want to try to get him wins. I'm dead serious. So they figure, hey, if he follows a guy like CeCe Sabathia, who only pitches three or four innings, he comes in, he's in line to get a victory. Well, look what happened. Walleye pitched four great innings, got a victory. Is that what's happening right now with Herman, or do they really see this as his role for October?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily getting him a win. I don't think that matters. It might if you get a chance to put him in position for the 20th. I believe them when they said he didn't have an innings limit, but you're at a position now where you have the extra bodies where you can take advantage of this. And I think what they are trying to do is get him in position for this particular type of role in the postseason. When you've got Luis Severino coming back, and he is at this point probably no more than a 70 to 80 pitch pitcher, I think pushing it past 80 is probably out of the question his first outing back. You're looking at, and I'll go back to this as well. If you look at every Yankee starter and look at simply at OPS against first time through the order, second time through the order, and third time through the order. Third time through the order, it's a disaster. Talking about turning every hitter in a lineup into an all-star, and 850 to 900 clip when you face them for the third time. If you have a guy like Herman and a guy like Chad Green, who you can drop in, let's say behind Severino or behind Sabathia, you have the ability to get through a crucial part of the game, multiple inning reliever. If you look at what happened the other day in the doubleheader, the way those two guys were used, Green was used for two innings. He's been that now for about 3 weeks now. He's been a multi-inning guy. Herman. Jumping into that outing for the first time, not starting. I know it was the Tigers, but if you look at how they were used and how effective they are in those roles, I think you're getting a clue as to how the Yankees want to run a postseason game.
I don't love it. Because what I would do, first of all, your point is fair, and I brought it up earlier about third time around the order. It's so true that you're going to see Boone, and even Dave Roberts last night, it's funny, manage differently in October than they're managing now by being quicker on the trigger to take their starting pitcher out. Like, Tanaka is out earlier last night than when Boone took him out. And Kershaw, same thing with the Dodgers last night. He's not facing as many hitters as he faced last night.
So we are Tanaka ideally last night would have come out after four innings if it was a playoff game.
You're probably right. I mean, look, we saw it in game two of the ALDS last year, and I was at that game thinking, come on, Tanaka looks good, keep him in. But I understood why Boone was thinking it. He didn't want him to face that order third time around. But I look at Herman and the way he's pitched this year, and sure, you want to be quick on the trigger taking him out. I think you're going to be like that with everybody because you've got a pretty good bullpen, a very good bullpen, and you're going to have a lot of off days, right? You don't have three straight games until you get to an LCS and a World Series. But to me, Herman deserves to start. He's pitched well enough to start. In fact, he should start game two of the ALDS because of his ability and the splits that we see home road. Paxton's splits aren't as extreme, and with Paxton right now, I have confidence pitching him anywhere the way he's pitched. So I don't know what the Yankee plan is, but I think Herman has earned the right to start a postseason game as opposed to being this guy who comes in the third inning and faces guys twice. I think he deserves a traditional start, Sweeney.
Yeah, but it's like I don't think it's looked at as a demotion, and I don't think it's looked at as a punishment of any kind. I mean, I think they're looking to use these guys in their most effective spots. And, I haven't updated these through the last turn through, but I had written down, so I'll just give them to you. Just as an example, Tanaka, before last night, the OPS against him third time through the order was 963. Mm. Okay, Herman, first time through the order, was 636. So you're talking about a huge gap. If you just want to, let's just say take last night's game for an example and say Tanaka out after four, then you bring in Herman, you're talking about resetting and dropping, a lot of, the numbers work out in your favor, theoretically, okay? But I don't think using Herman in a non-traditional way should be viewed as any sort of punishment. Look at what the Astros did to try to fix their bullpen issues 2 years ago and get them through. Look what the Red Sox did last year to try to fix their bullpen issues and get through to the World Series. This is how you can solve some problems in a pitching staff. When you don't have three, four guys who are going to go seven or eight innings and just dominate, you know, Justin Verlander is the exception to this rule. You know, he's not the rule. You know, even a guy like Kershaw, you know, he's managed differently because his third time through the order jumps dramatically. And the way it was put to me by a coach was that if you look at it strictly this way, it'll play out this way more times than not. Your worst reliever is better than your best starter the third time through the order. And that's what's driving a lot of these decisions. It's not pitch count anymore. It's not the number of innings. It's simply, okay, once he gets through two times through the order, where's the ideal place to get him out and bring in the better arm?
Now, you've got a very good podcast this week, 30 with Murdy featuring Timothy Busfield. And when I think of Timothy Busfield, I think of him being a real jerk in Field of Dreams. I mean, he was such a...
Yeah,
he was the Grinch about that beautiful field Kevin Costner built. Like, why'd you do this? What a waste of money. But very good podcast. So 30 with Murdy, actor. He's a director now. I didn't even know that.
Yep.
Timothy Busfield.
He's a tremendous baseball fan. He's a huge Tigers fan. Grew up in Michigan. We talk about exactly what you're talking about in Field of Dreams because, you know, the idea I hit him with is that every good fantasy movie has to have a non-believer.
Right.
And, you know, the non-believer has a fine line he has to work. He has to be he can't be totally unlikable. Timothy Busfield isn't totally unlikable. He's trying to save what he thinks is a lost cause, and you know, he's protecting his sister. He said there's love behind what's driving him, and that's the key right there. It's even in the script. It's in one of the lines, and he plays it very well. He's in Little Big League, where he plays Lou Collins, the veteran of that Twins team that's going to the playoffs, and he tells a tremendous story about filming the final scene where he has to face Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson calls time because Timothy Busfield's a left-handed hitter. Okay, he calls time to talk to the director and says, "You know, listen, when I go to New York, Boggs and Mattingly are taking themselves out of the lineup. Why am I facing this guy?" And he just couldn't let it go. Dude, it's in the script. You're getting paid money. Just go do it. And then trying to get him to throw a hittable pitch, because Timothy Busfield is not a professional baseball player hitting left on left. He's just trying to get him to throw a fastball over the plate that he can hit. And that took forever. We talk about The West Wing, in which he plays White House reporter Danny Concannon, and a lot of other fun baseball memories with him. It's a pretty good listen, I think. You'll enjoy it.
Very good. Sweeney, thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Ev.